Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 28 of the World Soccer Talk Podcast, we discuss how Liga MX continues to dominate the soccer TV ratings in the USA, what changes NBC should consider for their Premier League coverage next season, as well as all of the latest news and analysis of soccer TV coverage, and the questions and feedback from you, the listeners. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined here by Kartik Krishnaya. Kartik, how are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well. How about you?
I'm doing great. I'm actually just got back. Well, actually, I'm still not back home yet, so I'll be home in the next few days. But I spent the past about 7 days in Wales and England to go back to visit family. Had a great time, really, really good time. Unfortunately, there was the bombing in Manchester on Sunday night, Monday morning. So that's that was very, it was sad news overall. Just shocking news, really. But I'm glad to be back. And I didn't watch any soccer. That's the thing, though, too. I actually went on Sunday. I was there for the Sunday. Not too far from Swansea, actually, on the Sunday. For their final game of the season, but I was at a christening that day, so my schedule just did not fit with any soccer, and I actually didn't get to watch any of it on television either. I saw a few minutes of the Europa League final, but nevertheless, it was good to get away and recharge the batteries and visit the UK and kind of catch up with family. But Kartik, so let's jump in then to. It's been a big week in terms of lots of football on television. I didn't see any of it, but you did. So what have you been watching this past week?
Well, I mean, we're coming off, we're recording this Friday morning, which is a day later than we normally recorded. And that gave us the opportunity to watch the Tigres Chivas first leg of the Liga MX final last night and won a match. Chivas, the ratings for this are going to be enormous because this is Chivas' first final in the first time they've been to a final in 20 seasons. And they are one of the two real giants as far as popularity, as far as Mexican clubs, for those who don't follow that league closely. They get out to a 2-0 lead at Tigres, but that man, Gignac, who I think a lot of our listeners might be familiar with from his Liga 1 days and his exploits with the French national team, with two great goals, one in the 85th minute, and then a far post, tight-angled chip of the keeper in the 87th or 88th minute to bring it level at 2-2. And they go to the second leg now, Sunday night, with all the play for. That will be in Guadalajara. At Chivas' home ground, but on AstroTurf, artificial turf, the only artificial turf surface in the Mexican First Division. So that was great. That was last night. But let's go back to the beginning of last week, because there's been so much going on, and we had the final day of the Bundesliga, multi-match 90. Once again, a very good job by Fox Sports and by Ross Dyer hosting that. There was a lot on the line, and now Wolfsburg has fallen into the relegation playoff. They won that first leg 1-0 against Braunschweig, who's a local club not far from them. But they have a second leg to negotiate. But Hamburg's escape, great escape the last couple of weeks. The stoppage time goal, which everyone saw in multi-match 90 the previous week. And then the escape with the win that day. Leverkusen won. Augsburg got the results they needed, so Wolfsburg fell to 16th and into the relegation playoff. Let's not forget, just a year ago, Wolfsburg made the knockout stages in the Champions League, getting through a group that included Manchester United, who fell to the Europa League. So, big fall for them. Really good presentation once again for Fox on multinational match 90, the final day of the Bundesliga season. I'm not quite sure how they're doing this, because obviously they get the feeds from Sky. Sky Germany and those the commentary is in German. So I think what they're doing is they're stripping the commentary off of the feed, or they're getting a raw feed from the stadium and having Ross Dyer narrate over, unless it's a game that's on BT and it's being called by Derek Ray, or it's their own Fox game, which John Strong is calling. So or whoever, Keith Kostick and John Strong. So that was the final day of the Bundesliga season. Was up early the next morning to watch England and Argentina in the U-20 tournament, and great result for England. They played long ball under Paul Simpson. Against the run of play, they won 3-0. And that's the FIFA U-20 World Cup, by the way, which is going on in South Korea right now. Goals from Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He got the first goal completely against the run of play. And then Adam Armstrong, who I think forever now we thought was going to develop into a capable player for Newcastle. And the third goal was from the spot, and I am blanking out on who got that. But good result there, and it's great. Fox is showing us all these teams on FS1 and FS2. So that's fantastic. The Prem final day was a bit anticlimactic. There wasn't a whole lot to get excited about. There was some suspense early on, right, when Liverpool couldn't break through against against Borough, yeah. Right. And there was a questionable non-call on what could have been a penalty. But after that, it just was very according to form. NBC did a very good job, I think, with the goal zone, 2.5 hour goal zone, another which was simulcast on NBC itself. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump was giving a speech in Saudi Arabia, which was unfortunate for those who want to watch Spurs on MSNBC. About 60 minutes of the Spurs Hull game got preempted, and that was too bad, because by the time they got to the game, I think the score was 4 or 5 to 1 in favor of Spurs, and they ended up winning 7-1. But pretty good from NBC. We'll talk more about NBC later in the show.
That's a tough one too, because especially with it being MSNBC, out of all the channels that were on that day, that's probably the one that's most likely to, if something did break, some big news. Especially on a Sunday too. So in some ways it's unfortunate that they picked that channel. CNBC, you mean, it's kind of, usually financial news is not going to happen, breaking news on a Sunday morning type of thing. But something to consider for next year, maybe perhaps if they do something similar, is maybe they try and pick and choose a channel that's not going to be preempted if some big news happens. I think they own Chiller, which is a horror channel, which is also under the NBC umbrella. So maybe a lesson learned perhaps for next season.
Yeah, or you bump the least significant game to MSNBC, because the thing is, and I think we talked about this, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on there, but I've talked about it privately with so many people, including with a prominent UK-based journalist who I talked to from London the other day, after this happened, about the passion of Spurs fans in the United States, and that there are more Manchester United fans than Spurs fans, or Arsenal fans than Spurs fans, but it seems the volume, the intensity of Spurs fans is greater than just about any supporters base in the U.S. So that's absolutely the wrong team to have in a preempted match for MSNBC, for NBC and MSNBC. So I think that's a lesson learned. Moving on, there was an NPSL game here locally about an hour and a half north of me in the Treasure Coast of Florida between Beaches FC and the Central Florida Crays. And I got to call that game for Sports Mesh TV, which broadcasts the NPSL Sunshine Conference. I'm occasionally called in on spot duty to call games when their first string broadcasters or contracted broadcasters are not available. And it was actually an excellent game. I mean, I was thinking, gosh, after the excitement of Bundesliga and Premier League, and I had been up early to watch that U-20 game, the England game, do I really want to call an NPSL game? It was a very, very good game. And you can actually find my call on YouTube if you just Google that game or Sports Mesh TV. Got home, watched the last 60 minutes or so of Seattle-Orlando from NWSL. It was a good game. Orlando's defense is playing better. Same go 90 problems. I talk about it every week. It's like I'm beating a dead horse now, so I'll just say I watched that game and had some of the same complaints that I had previously. Up early the next morning to watch U-20 U.S. Ecuador, and the U.S. story in this U-20 World Cup is really interesting, Chris, because you've got a number of players who are under 20 who were not released by their clubs. Weston McKinney, who did play for Schalke on that final match day in the Bundesliga. Haji Wright, who made the bench for Schalke that final match day. Nick Tadaway, who I think probably would have made this U-20 team, but maybe not. He's also at Schalke. And then Cameron Carter-Vickers, who was released by Spurs and did captain the U.S. in the second game, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. minutes, but was not available for this game because he had been the Spurs had obviously had a game the same day, right, or earlier the same day, right. or the previous day. If you look at obviously this game is on Monday in Korea, so the U.S. defense was makeshift, and they gave up two goals right off the bat, fell behind 2-0 to Ecuador, and. Props to Fox. They're covering the USU 20 team properly, and it's on FS1. It's not relegated to ESPNU or when ESPN used to have these FIFA tournaments. They would bump the games to random places, right? ESPNU, ESPN Classic. Some games weren't even available on television. So props to them. Now, maybe it's because of the time windows also. It becomes much easier because it's coming from Korea. And the U-17s this year will be from India. So similar time considerations. But U.S. fell behind 2-0. They equalized 2-2 with two goals from Josh Sargent, who's a 17-year-old who many questioned Tav Ramos, the U.S. coach, calling him into the U-20 team. He'd never been capped at the U-20 level before this tournament, but he's been so good at the U-17 level, has scored as consistently for the U.S. U-17 team as Christian Pulisic did for the U.S. U-17 team, that Ramos felt like he needed a guy who could score goals in the striker position, and he didn't have that in the U-20 pool. So he calls Sargent, and he gets two goals. It's 2-2. Then the U.S. goalkeeper, Jonathan Klinsmann, who is the son of Jurgen Klinsmann, gets caught on the ball trying to do a Manuel Neuer or Hugo Lloris imitation. Ecuador gets a goal 3-2, but then De La Torre scores at the death for the United States. Fantastically exciting game. U.S. gets out of there with a 3-3 draw against Ecuador. And, again, Fox did a really credible job in broadcasting this game and doing the broadcast. So then let's move to midweek. USL, Rochester played Tampa Bay. That was a difficult game for me to watch in a sense because Rochester has changed their broadcast team, and they're not quite as good as the previous broadcasters, and this is due to USL Productions and USL centralizing things. Rochester has had good broadcasters for 20 years, guys who really knew the sport. People who actually, in fact, listened to this show or listened to the predecessor of this show when we would do our EPL reviews. But now the new announcers, I think it'll take them some time, but they seem less familiar with the club and the history and the league than I would have liked. You had the Europa League final from Stockholm, which Fox had Alexi Lalas do with why am I blanking out on who did the and Keith Costigan. Costigan and Lalas. I thought Lalas had a pretty good game, but again, he sounded subdued, kind of depressed, very as you would kind of expect, defensive of Mourinho's tactics, which were were pragmatic, to use the term that Jose loves to use. The studio show was pretty good, and I felt like Fox obviously didn't want to overdo it with John Strong, who I believe calls the FA Cup final this weekend, and then the Champions League final the following weekend, then goes to Russia probably for Confederations Cup. I'm not sure. We'll have some more details on that in the near future. But
So with that, Kartik, I got a couple of texts from some of my friends, and they were saying about because actually at the Europa League final, I was in London. I think I was out to dinner with my family, so didn't catch the game until the very, very end. But during dinner, I was got a couple of texts from friends just saying that they just could not stand Alexi Lalas and just his basically very negative or very dour kind of commentary style, and just it did not like it at all.
The game was very negative, though. In defense of Lalas, he sounded depressed, but I think Mourinho has this effect, and maybe Lalas should be more prepared and more professional about it, but the game was very boring. The game was terrible.
Yeah.
Once United got that goal, I don't know how. It's difficult.
Yeah, and really, that's what I expected too. This Ajax team, and I've been raving about this Ajax team for the last several podcasts. Such an attacking, beautifully creative team, and just so exciting to watch. One of my most favorite teams I've been watching in the last 6 months. But I knew against United, in terms of coming up against a very organized, more defensively minded, but very compact a team that was plays very intelligently in terms of knowing when to break, knowing when to counter, but just trying to control games and control teams, that Ajax would have a very difficult time beating this side. And especially with Pogba's goal, which was really a deflection. I mean, that really shouldn't have been credited to him, but he got it. It should have been an own goal. But in the rules of the game, it is a positive.
You got to criticize, and Gab Marcotti did this on ESPN FC that night. You got to criticize Vos for not having a plan B, because he knows he's coming up against Mourinho, as Marcotti said. And you know what Mourinho's going to do in these games? It's not any great mystery. And they didn't have a plan B. So Lawless's call was kind of depressing. It was lifeless. But the points he was making were good. I felt like he had a good game. It's just the enthusiasm and energy we were used to hearing from him was not there. But again, I mean, Mourinho has that effect on all of us, I think, unfortunately. It was just a horrible game, honestly. It was just an awful game. And it wasn't a match befitting of a final, but that's what happens when you get Mourinho in these situations, when he has, especially when he has put everything on the line on one game. It's not like United was pushing hard in the league. It's not like United was really focused on anything else these last 3 months other than this competition. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, was the net effect of it.
Yeah, for the neutral, not the best game to watch by far. But for the Man United supporter, I mean, all they wanted to do is win it. They've won it, so a huge celebration there. It was interesting, Conte, because when I did get back to my cousin's house in London, and the game had just finished. So in the UK, they were showing it on BT Sport, but also on YouTube. So they're showing the Champions League final and the Europa League final live on YouTube. And the reason that they're doing that is UK only. The reason that they're doing that is the TV viewing numbers in the UK for the Champions League on BT Sport have been far lower than what they promised to the advertisers. So in order to bump up the numbers and get those numbers up to a respectable number where the advertisers are happy in terms of what they were promised, however many millions of people watching these tournaments, that's what they did. So it was an interesting experience just watching BT Sport through YouTube post-match. And the post-match really was mostly just a little bit Michael Owen, Rio Ferdinand, just their analysis, which neither of them...
I'm not sure there was no analysis.
Exactly. Yeah, neither of them. I'm not big fans of either of them. So it was mostly kind of post-match footage of just the United supporters and Zlatan taking all the credits and kind of posing in front of the fans. That was the post-match coverage. So wasn't that impressed there from BT Sport, but oh well.
Yeah, and just finishing up on the week, that night was an NWSL game between North Carolina and Sky Blue. Good game, similar to top two teams in NWSL thus far this season, similar Go90 issues. Then the early morning U20 U.S. Senegal game, which Josh Sargent got the lone goal, great cross from Brooks Lennon. Brooks Lennon's having a really, really good tournament. A player who is on Liverpool's books, but has been loaned back to Major League Soccer. I don't know what the future is for the 19-year-old. He's not at that level, right, to play for Liverpool, but a good player who could end up somewhere else, maybe in Europe. Has put in some delicious crosses, responsible in one way or another for three of the four U.S. goals in this tournament. So, and obviously Sargent has three goals. And Sargent, it is being reported by Taylor Twellman, will sign when he turns 18. He's 17 still. When he turns 18, which will be early next year, 2018, with Werder Bremen. So that's another young American player going to the Bundesliga. And you wonder, and this is a topic for another week, but you wonder now if this is the push for the Bundesliga in the United States is having all these young American players. I talked about Tadaway and Weston McKinney, who made his Schalke debut at the weekend, first team debut. Haji Wright, who's going to be a first team member next year for Schalke. Obviously Pulisic, and you have Timmy Chandlers and Fabian Johnsons, John Brooks, et cetera, still in that league. Bobby Wood, if this is a push for the Bundesliga. On this match, Glenn Davis and Brian Dunseth were on the call, and I thought they were really, really good.
Yeah.
Dunning is getting better as a co-commentator all the time.
Yeah, he's solid.
He's solid, and I would encourage Fox to keep him in circulation in these opportunities, USU 20, Europa League, the places. I realize they don't use them on Champions League, and they generally don't use them very much on MLS. But when they have the opportunity to use them, because I thought he had a really good good game at like a 2 o'clock wake up call on the West Coast. Maybe he didn't go to bed. I don't know how they did it, but I thought both he and Glenn Davis were solid. So yeah. That was the week that was.
Yeah, it's interesting with Brian Dunseth because he doesn't get as much exposure as you would think. I mean, he does get exposure, but not the big game. So I wonder in terms of who his agent is, maybe his agent isn't pushing him as much. But he's, I mean, MLS games, yes, he's all over the place. He does a bunch of those.
Well, he does Real Salt Lake games, I think maybe part of the conflict, right?
Right.
Why he can't do. But he doesn't do enough MLS games on Fox or on ESPN. Brought him in for a couple of weeks at the end of during the Euros, right, when Taylor Twellman was away in France last year.
Yeah.
But other than that, he doesn't get much national exposure on MLS games. It's generally things like this, you know, U-20s, CONCACAF Champions yeah. League, he ends up calling the occasional Europa League game. I think he's been on a lot of the FS2 Europa League games, not even the FS1, not the Manchester United or other big English team Europa League games. It's always been the Villarreal versus, you know, Ajax game, right?
Yeah, but the two things to me, I mean to me, for Europa League, I would have much preferred Keith Costigan and Brian Dunseth doing the commentary than Lalas. And Lalas is great in the studio, whether you love him or hate him, but as a co-commentator, I don't think he's any good at all. It just, you mean, it's almost...
And actually, they paired Costigan and Dunseth on a bunch of Europa League games during the group stage and even during the knockout stage. So that's an interesting observation, Chris, because they didn't keep that team together.
Yeah.
For the final. That's a good point.
Yeah. And even Dunseth, too. I mean, he could be, you mean, down the road, perhaps an NBC could pick him up to use kind of have an American, like, co-com or analyst. As an analyst, I don't think Brian Dunseth's the greatest, but definitely as a commentator or a co-com. But yeah. I did watch a few games while I was gone. So actually, before I left, and that one of the games was the semi-final in the championship, in the playoffs, and that was both legs of the Sheffield Wednesday Huddersfield games and the Reading Fulham games. Actually, the second legs, I think I saw in those. So far, I mean, the final is this Monday, a Memorial Day, between Huddersfield and Reading. I was not impressed with Reading, and I wasn't that impressed with Huddersfield, but Huddersfield did win the match against Wednesday in that second leg through penalty kicks. And it was both teams were pretty equal until the end, and they had to be a winner. Huddersfield now with manager coach David Wagner, you could have a German American perhaps back in the Premier League, but I wasn't impressed with either Huddersfield or Reading.
Or you might have an American player, German American player also in Dan Williams. So you've got Williams versus Wagner, which is the big. The big American. There'll be an American, an additional American in the Premier League one way or another next season. David Wagner, a player who was one of the last cuts for the 1998 World Cup by Steve Sampson, never played again for the United States after that, but is does have an American passport and speaks good English because of it. And then, in fact, Eric Rinaldo has told stories about how when he first got to the U.S. team, he couldn't speak English at all and kind of picked it up being around the team. And there were enough American players who spoke German. Keep in mind, in that era, you had a lot of Americans playing in Germany, just like we have again now. And then Danny Williams. So that's on DN on Monday.
Yeah.
At Wembley. Now, this is a period of time when the Wembley turf is pretty torn up. We had the Bradford-Millwall final on Sunday. Then you've got FA Cup final on Saturday. I think we had the conference final before that. And then now you've got it culminates with the championship playoff final. So,
plus having been in England for the past week, Kartik, I didn't use my raincoat once. It was beautiful weather. In the 70 degrees, sometimes 60 degrees, just blue skies. Summertime has arrived in England, so that turf might be a bit on the dry side, perhaps. But Knowing London, it could be raining all weekend, but it's going to be a big match. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just haven't been impressed so far with the level, the playing level. But perhaps maybe in the final on Monday, it'll kind of go up a few bars and impress me more. But something I did watch these last few weeks, I did want to mention that if any listeners are kind of looking for things to kind of watch, especially with no Premier League matches on now too, as well as, I mean, La Liga season ending, etc. I've watched a few documentaries on YouTube, and I just want to mention a few of them, just let listeners know. The first one is called Two Hearts, One Soul, and it's a 10-minute documentary about the relationship between Notts County and Juventus, and it's a 114-year history between both clubs. So what happens is every season, Notts County fans travel to Italy to watch a Juve game, and vice versa, Juve fans travel to Nottingham to watch Notts County play. And the reason that they do this, and kind of the behind-the-scenes footage of showing what happens, is that in 1903, Juventus adopted Notts County's club colours. So the strip that, you know, the famous black and white stripes, that's actually from Notts County. That's where they got the inspiration for that design. So both clubs have kept a close interest among the supporters groups through all these years, and that was interesting. Another one was called Trouble at the Top, and this is a BBC documentary.
And where can you find the Two Hearts, One Soul?
Oh, okay. So all of these are on YouTube. So all of these are free. All of them are on YouTube. The full length documentaries. All of these. So the next one was Trouble at the Top. This one goes back probably, oh gosh, a good 20 years or so, maybe more. But it's a BBC documentary about Luton Town and how they went into administration but fought back through the help of their supporters' trust. It felt like a mockumentary. It felt like Spinal Tap, as if this whole thing, this behind the scenes kind of footage of what was happening at Luton Town and how the club was in trouble, and they had a buyer trying to come in to buy the club, and the chairman was trying to negotiate the deal. It felt like it was a mockumentary because it just seemed very surreal and didn't seem like how a football club should be run. But it was a true story. It was all the footage was real. Just an eye-opening look at how shady this club chairman was, and how, especially in the lower leagues, in terms of how football clubs are run, really eye-opening. So if you get a chance to watch that, that's highly recommended. Two other ones I watched. One was called Justin Fashanu, Fallen Hero. And that was a really wonderfully produced documentary about, to me, one of the greatest English natural talents from the 1980s. And in watching this, this is more basically his life story. Justin Fashanu, who was a really talented striker, played for Norwich City, scored one, which was goal of the season, one of the best goals I think I've ever seen against Liverpool back in the early 80s. But what I didn't realize is that how many connections he had with soccer in the US near the end of his career. He came over to the US after his English career was over. Came over here, he played for some teams, also was a coach for some lower league teams in the US, but and then sadly he died. I believe he committed suicide when he moved back to England. But really well worth watching, whether you know much about Justin Fashanu or you don't. But definitely check that one out. Carter, did you know about the US connection in terms of how?
Yeah, when the Atlanta Silverbacks started, he was on the team and he was the big star that they kind of marketed that first year or two of that club. And I think the club was called the Ruckus then. But he was there, and then he had come to the U.S. prior to that before going back to England, I believe, or Scotland or wherever. He had been he had played with a team in the APSL and had just kind of floated around, and there was a really good story a week or two ago in The Guardian, and it was very heartfelt from his brother. And his brother basically admitted, I don't want to get this wrong here, but I'm kind of paraphrasing, that he didn't quite understand in 1997 when or 98 when he committed suicide, when Justin committed suicide, what he had gone through, what it was, what it was like to be a black footballer and to be a gay footballer. And he couldn't relate to that. Now in hindsight, and he always fought with his brother, and he always kind of tried to scold his brother for not being more of a conformist. And just, I might be getting some of these things wrong, so Google the article in The Guardian. You're the right. Listeners, but it was really heartfelt, and basically said, "Now I understand. I love my brother. I wish I had his vision, his understanding, his courage at the time, 20 years ago. Yeah. It was fantastic read. You'll tear up reading it.
Yeah, yeah, and actually, the actual documentary too goes into that too, in terms of the relationship between John Fashanu, who wasn't as good of a footballer as Justin was, but John Fashanu went on to play with Wimbledon and kind of the crazy gang, and if anything, had probably at the end of the day probably more silverware, more trophies to show than Justin. And Justin was one with a natural talent, but a lot of it was money kind of went to his head, and things basically kind of took a bad turn after that, in terms of once his playing career, once he started after the peak and wasn't getting the goals. Also his relationship too with Brian Clough at Nottingham Forest, and how that was a really tough time for Justin Fashanu. So a whole bunch of different aspects of that one, highly recommended. Last but not least, there's one called They Think It's All Rovers, and it's a documentary about Doncaster Rovers and the plight the club found itself on the verge of relegation from the Football League to the Conference. These days, Doncaster Rovers are doing much better with a brand new stadium, but this documentary goes back and shows kind of the plight that this club was in, and where it was on the verge of bankruptcy and relegation from professional football to non-league football. Another highly recommended documentary, and it's on YouTube and it's free. So Kartik, before we move on to the next segment, I do want to mention a word from our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. So buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to buy tickets to live events, and with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. And there's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have a SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and just with a few taps, I can instantly find tickets. And I've been using it from the last few weeks to look for tickets for International Champions Cup games this summer, and the app experience was simple and easy to use. Now, SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Now, this summer, we've got International Champions Cup, we've got Gold Cup, and we've got tons of international friendlies featuring national teams as well as some of the biggest clubs from around the world coming to the US, and including Mexico too, a lot of Liga MX clubs too. So SeatGeek should be your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code WSTPOD today. That's promo code WSTPOD for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, Kartik, let's move on to the TV streaming news. So what's going on in that world?
Yeah, so beIN Sports has launched a Roku app that has both beIN Sports channels as well as the 10 beIN Sports Connect channels. You have to authenticate to prove that you're a TV subscriber in order to access it, which is par for the course with ESPN and Fox and NBC's apps as well.
Yeah, and I'd say this season I have watched more games through beIN Sports Connect than ever. I mean, it's just been so much coverage, so it's great that they do offer that. Now, as far as other news, Fox Sports has announced some preliminary news regarding its coverage of the Confederations Cup this June. Fox Sports will televise all 16 Confederation Cup games live from Russia from June 17th to July 2nd across its portfolio of networks. FS1 carries 12 matches, with two each appearing on the Fox Broadcast Network and FS2. In addition to the live game action, Fox Sports also offers daily pre-match and post-match studio coverage, plus 10 editions of FIFA Confederations Cup Tonight. That's a bit of a mouthful. An hour-long show offering analysis and commentary of the day's events. So far, Kartik, at least, it's par for the course. Even the show calling it FIFA Confederations Cup Tonight, which is pretty long. But even the same type of format that we've seen from like the Women's World Cup, where they had, I think, FIFA Women's World Cup Tonight. Nothing too surprising so far, but with a couple of the games being on the Big Fox Network, we'll have to wait and see what those are. But all in all, it's good that there will be coverage. Now, Kartik, I'm sorry. Anything to add there?
No, go on.
Okay. I can tell you're a big fan of the Confederations Cup. All right, so it's moving on to TV ratings.
I guess I'll watch some of the tournament, but I'm just not. I've never been too thrilled with this whole the emphasis on this tournament. Even when the U.S. made the run to the finals in 2009, it's largely a throwaway event.
Yeah, it's good for me. At least it's good to have on the background, and then I'll watch probably most of the matches, if not all of the matches. And who knows? Maybe it'll be better than we think. Maybe it'll be more entertaining, but we'll have to wait and see. Okay, so let's talk about TV ratings. The first number is a massive one from Liga MX, and that is 2.1 million people tuned in to watch Chivas against Toluca on Univision and Univision Deportes on Sunday. From 6:30 to 8:30 Eastern. Now, this was the Clausura semi-final second leg. Kartik, you talked about the final, the first leg at the top of the hour of the show. But 2.1 million, that's an incredible number for Liga MX.
Yeah. And I think the final might even be higher. The Sunday night second leg is going to be a massive number of Tigres and Chivas.
Yeah, definitely. And especially the way the first game went, and and with it being Sunday too, that's always a great time for and that's the thing too for Chivas. I mean, they have a huge support in the United States, but even for fans that are not fans of Chivas, they'll be watching, probably hoping that if they're Club America fans, hoping that Chivas loses. The other interesting thing, Kartik, too, is that as far as Mexican soccer, 390,000 people tuned in to watch Dorados against Lobos, and this was the Ascenso playoff final. So this is the playoff final, similar to the championship playoff final, where the winner of this one then gets promoted, in this case, to Liga MX. But 390,000 people tuned in to watch that one on Saturday. I believe this was on Univision Deportes from 10 o'clock until midnight. And for most soccer fans in the United States, probably most of us aren't familiar with Dorados or Lobos, but that's a big number. And actually, it's a bigger number than, I think, any MLS game for the entire weekend. Just goes to show. I mean, again, it's the promotion side of things, which people love. You got Mexican soccer, which people love. And it's meaningful. It's a meaningful game that means a lot with Lobos getting promoted to Liga MX.
Yeah.
So some of these other numbers that jump out too. So for Arsenal against Everton on NBC for that final Sunday, that had 787,000 people tuned in for that one. The Bayern Munich against Freiburg game, which was really meaningless in terms of, the title had already been wrapped up. But that was on Big Fox, and that was on the Saturday from 9:30 to 11:30 Eastern. That had 395,000 people watching that one. As far as MLS goes, we had LA Galaxy against Minnesota United. This one, by MLS standards, is a good number. It's, we had 331,000 people that tuned in to watch this game on ESPN on Sunday. 298,000 people for Liverpool against Borough on NBCSN on that final Sunday of the Premier League season. 207,000 people for Malaga against Real Madrid on beIN Sports. which is a little bit disappointing on the Sunday there. And then 173,000 people for New York City FC against Orlando on FS1 on Sunday. Any of those that jump out, or any thoughts on those, Kartik?
Yeah, it's not bad. The MLS ratings are, again, 173 for NYC or FC Orlando. This is the third team to play already this season, and the third time it's either been on FS1 or ESPN. So a little bit of overkill. That they MLS has tried to create a rivalry between those two teams, and I believe it does exist between the fans of those two teams because of the very different approaches that came into the league in the same year. Orlando was a team that had been built and promoted from the lower divisions.
So let's move on to listener mailbag. We got one message this week. This is from our former co-host, actually former host of the show, Nipun Chopra, and he sent this in through email. He says, good pod this week. I just wanted to clarify that NC Courage, so North Carolina Courage, is the NWSL team, the women's team. NCFC, which is North Carolina FC, is the NASL team. Chris, I think you accidentally said NC Courage a couple of times in the pod. In regards,
that's probably my fault because I haven't watched a single minute of NCFC, the NASL team, all season. I haven't seen them play a single minute, whereas I've watched just about every minute of the NC Courage. So I'm talking about them every week and probably rubbed off on you. And the NCFC team used to be called the Carolina Railhawks last season. So maybe the brand confusion and our confusion is due to that ownership group changing the name of the team more than anything else.
Yeah, it is a bit confusing. So I'm sure I'll be in July going to see Swansea City in the friendly that they're playing against NC Courage. Actually, no, NCFC.
NCFC.
And not NC Courage. Oh, what a mess. All right, anyway, if you guys, listeners, do have any questions, feedback, or comments about anything in relation to soccer coverage or how to cut the cord and watch soccer online, etc., YouTube, you name it, send us an email at web@worldsoccertalk.com. Send us a tweet at WSoccerTalk, or hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/WorldSoccerTalk. Now, let's move on to our feature topic of the week, and that is to discuss the changes that NBC needs to make to its EPL coverage next season. Now, this season is the first one since NBC has acquired the rights to the Premier League, where the TV ratings numbers have gone down from a previous season. So far, this, we're into the third year. And so far, every single year, the numbers have gone up and up and up. This year went down. But I think that's more a result of the kind of cord cutting, really, for a lot of it. Not so much the quality of what we've seen on television or the quality of coverage. But having said that, though, too, it's still a concern, and I wonder what changes NBC should consider for next season. So Kartik, I'll have you kick it off too, in terms of what you've seen thus far, and maybe some areas of improvement where you might think that they can fix things or improve them for next season.
Yeah, I think that obviously we've been pretty spoiled by NBC's coverage, and it's been very good, and they've fallen into a routine. But I think maybe there's a need, just like there is with a club at some point, even when a club is winning titles, to freshen things up, to maybe add some new features. I think one thing that could be very helpful is to have some sort of midweek bumper programming that keeps, when they're not midweek matches, that keeps conversation about the Premier League alive and is a destination for people who are fans of the league to get excited about the matches coming up that weekend or the context of what's going on in the league. So maybe even if it's a once a week show with Marquino, Musso, and Earl, a rotation, and maybe you're overworking Rebecca Lowe, so you need another host, but that sort of kind of magazine program where there's some analysis. Men in Blazers doesn't cut it as far as that's concerned. Okay. So that's, I think, one thing I would look at. Second thing is maybe bringing in a fourth studio analyst so you can rotate, a little more, and, I'm not quite sure who that person would be. I mean, you just we talked maybe about one of the prospective people, Brian Dunsett, I think would be pretty good earlier. That would be a guy, although he's been more a co-commentator than a studio guy, but I think he would probably acclimate well to the studio. There are a few guys at ESPN. I would look at Brian McBride. Certainly a shock at Hislop. I mean, Craig Burley would be my first choice, but he's contracted to ESPN for a while longer. Maybe that's what you do. Maybe a McBride or a Casey Keller is a safe landing spot. Both of those guys have played in the league and have a great deal of knowledge about the league. And in fact, I think, to be honest with you, on the ESPN program, McBride is more comfortable talking Premier League than he is Major League Soccer for whatever reason. So maybe a guy like that. But those would be my basic suggestions. And I think the other thing is possibly to make Premier League download more you don't have to make it more regular, but you have to make it more expected, if you know what I mean. It's just randomly the downloads are coming out. There'll be a Premier League download 1 week, and then you won't have another one for 6 weeks, and then you'll have them 3 weeks in a row. So more consistency in how they're scheduled and released.
Yeah, overall, I think NBC's coverage is fantastic. It's just definitely a trailblazer. There are areas of improvement. I like your idea, Kartik, in terms of having more coverage during the midweek or when there aren't games on. So basically the Tuesday through Friday for the most part. I think one of those things, though, too, I mean, they've started to rely a little bit more on Premier League productions using more of their content. And there's a lot of other shows that Premier League productions do out of England, interview shows, analysis shows, that, of course, would not feature NBC talent. But if there's a way for NBC to kind of start using more of that content and use that as filler, filler's okay, I think, for Tuesday through Fridays. Maybe having more of the Premier League news show, which is, I think, a really quality, well-produced show. That's a great kind of catch-up to find out what's going on, what happened in the Premier League that day. And as you know, Kartik, and I know too, that's the thing with the Premier League too. It doesn't stop when the season's over, and doesn't start up again when the season kicks off. The summer usually is a very frenetic time. It's a very busy time in terms of managers coming and going. We've already seen that in this past week. There's always the news about the fixtures coming out and TV schedules. But the transfer market, that's the big one, and that's the biggest area that NBC misses out on. I mean, yes, it's great to have Neil Ashton on weekends giving his insight in terms of what's happening behind the scenes at the clubs and what's going on with transfer dealings. And it's great to have that wrap-up show or the live show on the final day of the window. But outside of that, there's a huge opportunity that they're missing out on. A lot of that coverage is probably more applicable to breaking news and having that online. But I don't know about you, Kartik, but I don't really visit the NBC website for soccer news. I mean, yes, they have some great people on there and some great coverage, but that's not where I go to for my news, especially when it's breaking news or insight. So definitely some opportunities to improve there.
Yeah, I don't think that they've, and if there's one critique of them, I don't think they've quite gotten down what the right role is for NBC Pro Soccer Talk or for NBCSports.com, right?
Yeah.
And that and how it complements their coverage. And they've had Joe Prince Wright, who's very talented, doing that for a number of years, but I don't for 4 years now.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure they fit that into their coverage as seamlessly as you would like. Although I have to say that that's the same situation with Fox and FoxSoccer.com, where I don't think that fits seamlessly into what they're doing from a television perspective. Now, ESPN has somehow done a better job of it, and mm-hmm. part of that is having a guy like Gab Marcotti as a feature, and Honigstein and Sid Lowe as kind of featured journalists who are also on the show regularly, although those guys all write for other publications also. So that's although Marcotti has a lot on ESPNFC.com. He also, as we know, writes for Everybody Under the Sun, maybe the most in-demand English soccer journalist globally, and for good reason, because he's real good at this. But I don't think that they've quite gotten it down.
Yeah.
The relationship between web and television, and even the relationship between the show called Premier League Download and how you access that online.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The website is clunky. Listeners know, anytime you go to the site and you want to watch some videos, whether it's highlights or perhaps maybe you missed some coverage of some of the games, or you want to watch the Premier League fantasy show, you have to watch an ad, pre-roll before every single thing. So if you want to hop from video to video to video, oftentimes you're watching the same ad over and over again. It's not a really good experience. I do know that Pierre Moussa, who's the head producer at NBC Sports and really one of the key people responsible for how great this coverage is that we do see on NBC from the Premier League, he has hired somebody on his team to be the point person that's going to help in terms of the handoff. So we've seen this this season too, a little bit too, where Rebecca Lowe would tease a feature that's featured on the NBC website to go check it, NBCSports.com, to check that out and read whatever the topic is. From personal experience, when that's happened, I've gone to the NBC Sports website, whatever it was, I can't remember the examples, but I couldn't find the story that they were teasing. So, yeah, this definitely it's kind of left hand, right hand. They're not working.
To be honest with you, I didn't even notice that. I don't even remember that. So yeah. that tells you kind of how memorable it was for me. And I'm not the sole focus group on this, but I don't remember them teasing that stuff that frequently.
Yeah. So just a few things from my point of view in terms of some things to improve. One is, I think at this point we need to reconsider, NBC should reconsider the whole idea of having Championship Sunday. Yes, it's great to have all those games across all those networks, but we've seen it now that it happens so infrequently that anything of real material must-see watching happens on that day. It's usually the season's wrapped up with a couple of weeks to go before the end for relegation as well as the title and sometimes the Champions League spots. But it's anticlimactic. It's one of those things. I like the idea and I appreciate them doing that. But even for us, Kartik, as being hardcore soccer fans, it's hard to get really passionate about that final day. And maybe from NBC's point of view, maybe they look at this as more of a marketing opportunity to expand the amount of people to watch these games.
It's just become a day with a lot of dead rubbers and a lot of goals. And because there have been a lot of goals in the games the last few years, and we always think back to Fergie's last game, that was still in the days when Fox and ESPN showed these games. But the 5-5 West Brom. But there have been a ton of games like that through the years on the final day of the season. And obviously this week it was no exception. Goals galore. That maybe it's also, perhaps because there are so many dead rubbers, an opportunity to show that soccer can be high scoring to a mass American audience that wouldn't normally be exposed to the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then something else too. From my personal point of view, and again, listeners might disagree with this, but I'm getting a bit burnt out on Arlo White. It's wonderful that he's there in the stadiums, in the commentary gantries, doing the games. But oftentimes he's doing sometimes like on average two games a weekend, sometimes three games a weekend. And I think it's getting a little bit stale. I'd like to see if NBC could consider putting somebody else in to maybe. Steve Bauer would be the natural as far as giving him more games to do, but perhaps somebody else. It's just Arlo's, I don't know. I'm just getting a bit burnt out on listening to his commentaries. I don't find them as appealing as I did when NBC started the Premier League coverage way back when a few years ago.
Yeah, that sounds right. Unfortunately, and I think the thing with Arlo also is that he's very. He's just very he's very busy in kind of his presentation style. So for a lot of people who prefer a British style of commentary, even though he has a British accent, he's not their cup of tea. I'm used to him. I've gotten accustomed to him. But I think there's also the issue of overexposure with him, where he's calling so many games and sometimes as many as three games a weekend, generally one or two. But still, that – maybe you want to freshen it up, mix it up a little bit. That having been said, you see the incredible chemistry of the group. And when they brought in, and I mentioned this on the Premier League Download, from the one from Pundits at the Lane, when they brought Phil Neville into the group, he didn't seem to have the same chemistry with the rest of the guys.
Yep.
And there was no Arlo White that day. It was Steve Bauer. But Bauer and Martino and Earl and Musso and Dixon and Lasso, Neville seemed to not fit in with the group of the rest of them. And Bauer was consistently trying to engage him. Now, obviously, Bauer was Manchester United MUTV presenter when Phil Neville was still at the club there, and then also his brother obviously was captain of Manchester United. So there's a relationship there. But yeah, I that made me think, because I keep thinking they need to freshen up their talent, and I said it at the outset of the segment, but maybe they have such a really good thing with chemistry. It's just like a football club. It's just like a playing squad that if you interject the wrong element in that playing squad, the chemistry goes kaput.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate too that when Arlo did go missing, well, he wasn't going missing. His wife had surgery, went into the hospital, so they had to. He wasn't able to actually commentate one of the big games. To me, I didn't really miss him that much. I think it was Steve Bauer stepped in.
It should be noted Bauer has massive BBC commitments also, which is why we don't see him as much as maybe we'd like to. But he does seem to be available midweek, which goes back to my midweek point, because he's generally brought in to give some analysis every Monday whenever there's a Monday game.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps he has more time on a Tuesday or a Thursday where he could even anchor a show from the UK for NBC.
Right, right. And then my last comment in terms of improvements that NBC can make, and to me, again, if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you've heard this before, but I really want them to get rid of the advertorials, the product placements. It's really cheap, and it cheapens the whole coverage in terms of the halftime and post match analysis and pre match analysis, when they're going out of the way to promote certain products and using touchscreens and tablets. I don't think it's necessary. And again, I think it cheapens the product. And if anything, makes me not want to go out there and get that product just because it pisses me off. I mean, it just feels fake. And NBC's better than that. They don't have to resort to things like that. Yes, I'm sure Microsoft is paying them a lot of money to do those product placements, but there's got to be a better way where you don't upset the viewer, or there's got to be a better way to promote those things without being so blatant about it. Anything else, Kartik, in terms of any other things that they can improve upon that you can think of?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. I mean, in some cases, we might be drawing at straws because they do such a good job, but there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, definitely. So, Kartik, where can listeners find you on the internet?
You can find me at KKFLA737 on Twitter, and my DMs are open, so feel free to contact me anytime.
Excellent. Well, thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday or Friday. This week it was a little bit later just because I was traveling from the UK. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media, and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. So on behalf of me and Kartik, thank you for listening. And Kartik, over to you.
Enjoy your football.